Everybody, welcome to the Canine Connection podcast. Today, Lori and I are going to start talking about pressure. I say start because I have a feeling this is going to be at least two episodes.
Yeah, we need to definitely put a timer on you. This is Paige's favorite. We've been waiting.
Well, it is my favorite topic, one of my favorite topics, because the way I learned about it was not in a way that someone taught it to me, right? Like, it was not something we ever addressed in competition obedience. It was not addressed when I was teaching my dog and competing in agility. It was not addressed when I was doing, it was just never addressed, like, ever. So, I don't know, if a dog looked uncomfortable, we were just like, yep, you're uncomfortable, too bad, do it, right? That's mm-hmm. just how we handled it. So it wasn't until I had Zeal, right, who was incredibly sensitive and afraid of everything and worried about everything and nervous about everything. And he would do certain exercises, be in certain situations, and look like he was going to die. Literally mm-hmm. look like he was going to die. And I felt sorry for him. I did. I felt sorry for him. And I was like, I would do all the stuff I had been taught, like all the games, all the motivational stuff, tugging. It took me like a year to teach him to tug. And I just did it because I was like, this is important. And we tug like crazy. And we did all that stuff, and in certain situations, he still looked like he was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really not happy about that, but I really didn't know what to do because I just didn't understand. And I have to give credit to a behaviorist because that's the person, and I stumbled upon her completely in a roundabout way, because I had Zayden, and Zayden was not wired right. So he was not a typical dog. And when I say not wired right, I mean legit not wired right. Like, he presented like the dog version of a person with autism, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was working with this behaviorist. And so I was in Michigan, wherever she is.
Yeah, Michigan.
And working with her, I guess it's Brenda Aloff. I should give her a shout out because
yeah,
she
definitely.
Taught me so much. She taught me so much. And anyway, so working with Zayden, and then, you know, I had Zeal there. I don't even remember exactly how this evolved, but next thing you know, we're working with him. I'm like, yeah, he's nervous. You know, there's nothing I can do about it. And she started to explain to me about pressure and how pressure affected a dog and how dogs felt about pressure. And because she's a horse person and people with horses, they communicate to those animals and they train them with pressure on, pressure off.
Mm-hmm.
So they have this insane sense and understanding of pressure and how it affects the animals, right? And they need to, because it's a safety concern, because they're dealing with enormous animals that are incredibly powerful. And if you put them in a bad position, it could go really badly for you.
Right.
So anyway, so she taught me about pressure on, pressure off, even directed me to some horse books, which I read, of course. Don't ask me the title. I don't remember. But, you know, just about, it was like about natural horsemanship, about
yeah.
like putting pressure on, taking pressure off, about how pressure affected the animal. So I started to say, oh, okay. Like, so when my dog is uncomfortable, pressure makes a dog uncomfortable. So people always ask me, well, what's the difference between like pressure and a distraction? This is my definition. I'm sure somebody that has a degree or, you know, is a behaviorist is going to be like, oh, lady, you've got it all wrong. But the way I interpret it is, when my dogs are distracted, they're curious. They're not uncomfortable. They're like, oh, what's that? Right. And I see that in dogs, like their body looks very different. Their face looks different, their body. So if they're like, oh, what's that over there? Their ears are up, their body's relaxed, their eyes are bright, they're leaning towards it, their tail is up or wagging, and they're just, you know, oh, what's that? So picture your dog in the yard. Watch your dog in the yard. I watch my dogs around the house in the yard all the time. If they hear something, they're like, oh, what's that? That is a look of curiosity to me. That's a distraction look. Mm-hmm. When a dog is under pressure, the dog is very uncomfortable.
Right.
That looks very different, right? Like their ears are back. Their eyes are like a little like whale-eyed, like uncomfortable. Their body looks tense. It's like they're drawing into themselves. Their tail might be down or their tail might be frantically like, wagging. You know, the dog might be like panting a lot. The dog is just uncomfortable. So again, in life, if your dog is in an uncomfortable situation, like maybe if your dog doesn't like the vet, what does your dog look like there? Right. It's so pressure does not feel good. So when a dog is under pressure, it invokes primitive response where they want to flee or freeze or fawn. Right. Mm-hmm. So they want to flee. They want to move away from it. Freeze is when they just stand there. That's what Zeal would do. Like deer in the headlights, like couldn't do a thing. Just like frozen in spot. In the spot and like incapable of doing anything.
And I think a lot of people, when you say that, are going to be, oh, that's what's going on, you know, during that exercise in the ring. And my dog's just standing there staring at me. Like,
yeah,
that's that
when the
look.
Dog's just standing there or fleeing. Like, a lot of times they're like, ugh, my dog ran away and is sniffing. Stop sniffing. Don't sniff. Ugh, you and your nose. No. They're fleeing.
Right.
They're escaping. And then the sniffing's a displacement behavior, but they're looking to escape that uncomfortable situation.
Yep.
So see that in agility a lot. Dogs heading to the weave poles, handlers overhandling and converging on the dog. Move, move, move. And the dog's like, I'm out.
Yeah.
And it moves away. And then what does it do? It's like, oh God, I don't know what to do. It starts sniffing the floor.
Yeah.
Right. And then people are like, oh, he sniffs the floor. He's distracted, blah, blah. No, he's escaping the pressure. Right. He's like, get me out of here. So it gets misread a lot. And then there's fawning, which is the whole, my dog is so friendly. It wants to mug the judge. No, it's uncomfortable. It's trying to control its space. So it's like if I frenetically jump on this person and it looks frenetic, right? The dog's like panting. It's kind of like I'm very edgy. Tail's going 90 miles an hour. And it's like jumping, 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 jumping. It's trying to control its space and it's trying to push you or that person away from them, right? So that's fawning. It's another way of the dog trying to escape the pressure, right? I don't want to stand here or be here or move here while you're approaching me. So I am going to control this situation and I'm going to jump up on you. And then it's going to look like I'm being friendly and I am not at all being friendly, right?
Right.
Like Zayden hated being touched because he couldn't tolerate like petting.
Yeah.
Because his nervous system was not wired right. So he appeared to be, quote unquote, friendly. Because if you came into my house or my yard or approached him, he would run straight at you, immediately jump straight up on you and act like he was licking you. And what does that do? A person pulls themselves head away and backs away. That's what he wanted. He was like, don't come up. Don't come up to me. Don't try to touch me.
Yeah, he was controlling it.
He was controlling the situation, right? So that was not friendly.
Right.
That was him saying, get out of my space. Don't come into my space. I'm controlling this situation.
Right. I think that's a big thing. I think people who don't understand pressure or what it may look like to, you know, with the dog feeling pressure, they sort of default into, well, my dog is just being disobedient. Mm-hmm. Or my dog's blowing me off, right? Mm-hmm. And when in fact, it usually isn't. It is usually caused by some sort of pressure going on and the dog is displacing in one of the three that you just mentioned.
Yeah, like I saw it in, you know, I just had my pressure class and like I love when I have students from different disciplines. I had someone with nose work. I'm like, let me see some of the issues. And it's like, you know, it's a tight space. Mm-hmm. The dog's searching in it in an aisle, right? And then there's a person in the aisle, like a an employee doing whatever on the shelves, and the handler. And the handler had to be really mindful of how she was moving because it was trapping the dog, mm-hmm. right? Like with an aisle, the person, and it was making the dog uncomfortable, right? So it's being observant of the dog and reading when the dog is uncomfortable. And then in that moment, looking around and saying, what's happening? Right.
Yep.
'Cause that's important information. So I always want to see in a video what happened immediately before. This is why video is absolutely a critical tool, right? I want to see what happened immediately before. So if a dog's running towards the handler, and the judge is converging on the dog. And as the judge is converging, the dog jumps on the handler and jumps into heel position. I'm going to surmise that the judge pressure is what caused the dog to avoid front position.
Yeah.
And the dog's usually doing it with like ears back, kind of like, blah, and then like, oh, I'm just going to go here.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
So you need to see the full picture of what's happening in that moment and not just assume my dog auto finished, my dog, you know, or my dog blew the contact. Did it blow the contact or did it blow the contact because it was trying to get the heck out of there because the judge is converging on the dog to, you know, be at a good vantage point to see if the dog hit the yellow or not.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you need that full picture, especially initially when you're learning about pressure, so that you can kind of like put all those pieces together. Right.
And determine what caused it.
Right?
Yeah. Like a great example was when Ever first started showing in utility, and I would, you know, I try to video everything. So and she had come over the jump and she looked happy. And then she came like she was going to bounce right into front. And then she went right into heel position. And after, you know, I watched the video after the trial, and sure enough, the judge coming around to check that front was enough to cause her to feel that pressure where she wanted to escape it. And so she just went to finish. So that she wouldn't have to sit in that uncomfortable spot right in front with the judge coming in.
Right. So I want to see when I look at a video like, A, does the dog look uncomfortable? Right.
Right.
Because that's a sign to me. The dog's uncomfortable. Then I want to say, okay, what could be making the dog uncomfortable? Oh, the judge movement. Or, oh, they're close to a lot of people. Or, oh, the handler was converging on the dog. Or, you know, the environment is really challenging and that the dog is feeling pressure from that. Like I had this great example, this is a while ago. The student had a dog and it, so she had been in a trial. I knew the venue. And so the dog came running in on the drop on recall. She gave it the signal to drop and the dog didn't drop. So she comes into lesson. She goes, we have to work on the drop on recall. The dog was naughty. Failure to drop. She didn't listen. And I knew where she trialed. And I know that venue, right? And I said, are you sure it wasn't pressure? No, she was naughty. I said, okay, let's do a little experiment. Let's put her in the middle of the building that we were in, right? Wide open, right in the middle. I'm going to stand all the way over to the side. So I'm a non-issue. There's nothing bothering the dog. let's do a drop on recall. Does it perfect? Perfect, right? I go, okay. Now, I happen to know that this building used to be very dark. So I turned off the lights. And I also happen to know, I said, they always set the dog up for the drop on recall in that corner. It's a creepy corner. It's a corner. It's really dark in that corner. Mm-hmm. Right. It's a kind of a musty building. Like, yeah. I feel pressure. So like I go into the corner in that building and I'm like, ugh.
Right.
And so the wall is to the left and there's a wall behind and the judge stands to the right. So now the dog is between three forms of pressure, right? A
right.
barrier on the left, a barrier behind, the person on the right.
Right.
Boxed so in. We put the dog in the corner in the building we had the lesson in. I turned the lights off and I stood where the judge would stand, maybe a little closer just because it was training, right? And she called her dog. She told the dog to drop. The dog started and then was like, screw this. Boom, ran in, right? And I said, see, she's trying to escape the pressure. It's not a failure to drop. It's and the dog is uncomfortable with pressure.
Exactly.
It's a pressure issue. So now I am never going to add pressure to pressure, right? Because the dog's already uncomfortable. If I say to the dog, naughty dog, you lie down. I said, lie down. I'm putting pressure on the dog. So now I'm putting pressure, more pressure on top of an already uncomfortable, pressure-filled situation. So what is my dog going to learn? Pressure sucks big time.
Yep. Yep.
Right?
Like, yes.
And it's already terrible. And now I'm going to get in trouble. And then the error rate goes up.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. And the discomfort goes up.
Yeah. I think the best example for everybody to relate to, because everyone starts off in novice, is teaching your dog the stand for exam or even the sit for exam for beginner novice, right? I think if you took any dog and sat them and told them not to move and had some stranger approach, it would be a phenomenon if that dog, that young dog, sat there and tolerated that with no issues at all, right? But yeah. We all have to train for that because that's hard. That's super hard with somebody coming in.
Well, I liken it to, and I use this with my girls at work in the boarding kennel and when I had the rehab, because you have to be really careful, right? These dogs are put in, they're stressed out. They're in like challenging situations. You have to really pay attention.
You really
do. Some of them, you know, they're like, oh, look, the dog, it's a stuffed animal. I'm like, no, it's going to bite your face off if you're not careful, right? I mean, for real. So I would explain it to them, right? And like try to be really educate them. And then I could see they're not getting it.
Right.
So one day I was like, okay, I'm going to.
You're going to teach them a lesson.
Walk. Well, do this to somebody. Like literally do this. It is the most uncomfortable thing in the world. Walk up to somebody at a brisk pace and literally stop like a centimeter from their nose.
Right.
Oh, that's uncomfortable. It is horribly uncomfortable.
Horribly.
That's what you're doing to the dog when you stick your face in the dog's face.
Exactly.
Now, and then you wonder why it wants to bite your face off.
Right. Right.
Like,
right.
I want to bite your face off. Right. So it's the same. Like, how would you feel if we went into like a building that you've never been into and I said, just wait here. Don't move. I'll be right back. Don't move. Whatever you do, don't move. And I walked away and some strange man walked up and started to touch you.
Exactly.
I don't think you'd be standing there with a smile on your face.
Right. Or, and then that strange man is touching you and we're yelling, stay,
stay
you stay. Stay
bad I mean, maybe if
dog.
The guy's super hot, but no kidding. Sorry. Sorry. No, but it's just freaking uncomfortable. You would hate it.
Totally hate it.
And then we get annoyed with our dogs. Like, what's wrong with you? Just stand there already and deal with it.
Right.
Come on.
And take it. Exactly.
And then we wonder why they want to move. they want to move because they want to get out of there.
Right.
Or why they want to jump up and act quote unquote friendly because they're like, get off me.
Right. Right. Yes.
Or why they stand there and they look like they're going to die, tail between their legs. Like, right. Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God. Because that's exactly how I would be. I'd be like, oh, he's touching me. Oh, God. Get him off me. Get him off me.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. You can read them like a book. Oh, my God. And the other one, too, adding pressure to pressure. A good example is the dumbbell. Like, right. So people who are training their dogs to hold the dumbbell and they literally take the dumbbell. I'm like, all right, well, I'm having trouble with the hold. All right, well, how did you teach it? Well, they pry their dog's mouth open and they shove the fucking dumbbell.
God.
And then they take their hands
and they
one on
it.
Top yeah. and one on the bottom and they close the dog and they go, hold. No, you hold. And the dog is like, it's like just getting worse
horrified.
And worse.
Horrified. Yeah. Well, it's the same example. Like, how would you feel if I took something and shoved it into your mouth?
That's what, like, I tell them. I'm like,
you know,
why
or how
you
would you feel
mouth?
If I took my hands? Like, if I reach my hands towards a student's face, what are they going to do?
Draw back.
Exactly.
Or they
don't,
punch
you. You don't want me, like, touching your face. Never mind, like, shoving your jaw shut.
Right.
You'd be like, get your hands off me. What are you doing?
Exactly.
Right. So I think people have to stop thinking, like, I don't know if they think the dog's a robot or it's a stuffed animal. Like, it's a sentient being, not so horribly different from us.
Right.
In terms of, like, what makes them uncomfortable.
Yes.
You know,
exactly.
Like, if you're standing still and you like, if you're walking down the street or in a parking lot and you hear somebody behind you, you are going to look.
Right.
You can't not look. Like, I tried once. So I did this wacky experiment because I'm so kooky. So it was actually at Syracuse. So I have a bunch of equipment that I took out of my car. I'm heading towards the door. I hear a car, like, pull into the parking lot. I know that I am not standing in the parking lot, but I have this urge to look.
Yeah.
So I'd say to myself, self, this is what the dogs feel like. Don't look, right? So I'm like, okay, don't look, don't look, don't look. And then the second I stopped saying, don't look, I looked. I was like, oh my God, I just looked. Right,
right, because you can't help it.
You can't help it. It's instinct. It's just, it's a primitive reflex. It's instinct. You don't feel safe.
Right.
So you feel like you need to look. And as soon as I looked, the urge was gone. I didn't feel like I needed to look anymore. And it was all good, right? So some of it, too, like, a dog's going to be uncomfortable if someone's or something is approaching or happening behind them or off to the side. They're going to have this overwhelming urge to look briefly just to make sure they're safe. And we're going to be going, leave it.
Yeah.
Don't look at that. Pay yeah. attention. And now the dog's going to hear something and it's going to go, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God,
yeah,
oh, God.
Right. I think that's a good one. When I started ever showing her in utility, back to that, first couple times I went and did articles. I'm like sitting there. I sent my article. I hand it off. And she's like, all of a sudden, she's like bent looking over her shoulder because even though we trained for it a bazillion times, like, she felt that, like, huge urge to have to look. She didn't yeah. feel comfortable. And I really didn't make a big deal out of it. Like, I trained for all that stuff in training, and it actually worked out, like, where it just kind of went away, you know, on its own. Like, mm-hmm. if I had dug at that and got after her about it, that probably could have caused, like, a major problem down the road.
Problem. Yeah,
right.
A huge problem. Yeah. So I think the very first step is identifying when pressure is an issue. Now, remember, the dog looks uncomfortable. Because I was telling Lori when we were talking before we started, like, I want people to identify pressure. It's critical. It's important. It's going to yeah. help your dog tremendously. However, that does not mean that every single thing is pressure.
Right.
Because then my students go like on the other end of the spectrum, they're like, oh, that was pressure. I'm looking at the video. I'm like, your dog's fine. Your dog, look at your dog. It's happy as a clam. It did not perceive that thing as pressure.
Right.
So it's what the dog perceives as pressure. It's not what you perceive as pressure. It's not what you think the dog should or should not feel as pressure. It's what does the dog, that individual dog, perceive as pressure. Because Zaina might feel, see something and feel zero pressure, and Zesty might feel a lot of pressure from that.
Right.
So it's individual.
It is individual. It's very individual. And not every mistake or occurrence is due to pressure. Like, there's other things causing mistakes and errors.
Right.
And
but pressure is a factor. It's widely underrecognized in many, many sports. It's I don't think it's talked about enough, and it's not identified enough. Right. And so therefore, a lot of times people are handling errors, in my opinion, in a way that's not like the most beneficial. It's not going to giving the dog the right information. Because if you don't identify it as a pressure error, then you're going to treat it as, you know, disobedience or a mistake or confusion. And then it's just going to make the whole thing more messy.
Right.
Versus if you can identify it as a pressure error, then we can remedy that. Right.
Right.
But we can't remedy it if we're not even identifying it.
Right. Which is a big thing that always comes back to, you have to read your dog. Like, or you have to be always, you got to learn how to read your dog, which is like we talked about, like, you got to watch your dog, be observant. Like, I watch my dogs, like you said, I watch my dogs all the time. We go hiking, they're running in the field, I'm watching my dogs. In fact, a great example was this morning. I hiked the dogs, we're out in a field. The dogs are ahead of me. They go around the bend. I can't see them. Stormy shoots out to the other side, and her ears are back. Her tail's down. Her entire body posture is different. I immediately knew something was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a millisecond to see that. And sure enough, I went around the corner and there's a coyote on a standoff with Ever. I'm like, great.
Oh, nice.
But that's how quick, like, I read her. Mm-hmm. I'm always watching my dogs, even in the house, even out on a walk, even when I'm walking through the training building, because that's the only way they can communicate, or we can read their language, is through their bodies. So that in itself is something that I think everybody just needs to work on all the time, is learning and
for
reading.
Sure. Like my friend, I don't usually let my dogs don't usually play with other dogs, but is one a friend, and she's a trainer and she's really good with her dog. So anyway, she brought her dog over and it was playing with Zest. And it was hilarious to me because the whole time, like at first we didn't even realize we were doing it, right? But we're narrating what each dog is saying the whole time they're playing. They're like, oh, this is really fun. Oh, I like you. Oh, I'm doing that. You know, I'm saying his part, she's saying her dog's part. And then we look at each other like, oh my God. Like, but to us, every second that those dogs were moving and communicating, we were reading that.
Right.
Like, really clearly. Like, to us, it was so obvious.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that just comes from observe. Like, she came to me, when she came to me and started working in the kennel, she had no dog experience. She didn't know anything about dogs.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And she wanted to learn how to train dogs. And she just, observed, you know, soaked up, took tons of courses, you know, obviously I helped her, but I think that she is such a true, she's a pet trainer. She's unbelievably good.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, it's because she can read dogs so well.
Yeah.
You know, and it's because she's really applied herself. She even went to, I don't want to say the wrong thing, India. This guy is doing this study on street dogs. And so it was this, like, for a week, she and a few other people went and they got to, like, get and be involved in this. So basically, they're just reading the dogs' body language and watching them out in the street. And it was really cool. But in any event, it's just gathering all this data on reading dog language.
Yeah. And I mean, really, I mean, when it comes to training dogs, like, you have to read dogs. Like, you have to read them to really be able to apply whichever method you're going to use to help them or teach. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like, it's like a critical tool you need. It really is.
But it's not taught. Like, I was never taught to read my dog, right? I was taught if I give a cue, dog has to execute the behavior.
Right.
Dog doesn't do the behavior. How do I get the dog to do the behavior? Then how do I get the dog to do the behavior consistently? It wasn't why did this happen as much as it was wrong. You need to do it right.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that is how I was taught by the majority.
Well, that's kind of how it was. You know, that's kind of how it was. You know, like, it really didn't matter how the dog was feeling.
No, and it wasn't until, like, I had Tyler, and I just knew that dog was trying 100% of the time. Like, hard. Really give it. That dog gave me so much effort. It was ridiculous. So when he made a mistake at a certain point, and people would say to me, well, you have to correct that, I'd be like, no, I'm not, because, like, he doesn't know it's wrong. Because if he knew it was wrong, he would never do it. Right. And that's where I started to think more about, like, that was the very, very beginning. I'm not saying I could read dogs then, because I could not. But it was the beginning of me starting to think about more than just cue behavior, right? Behavior's right or wrong.
Right.
And then the more time went on, the more I learned to read dogs, the more I understood about different things, the more I realized, like, well, it matters. 100% matters, because what I'm going to do varies greatly if you're confused versus if you're distracted versus if you're under pressure.
Right. Like, exactly. You know, so I think people will understand and recognize, like, so you're in the ring. For me anyway, this happened a lot before I really had to work through this. You are walking away on either commands or a recall or signals. It happened to me with signals with Ever a ton. Like, in training, I can tell when my dog is happy. I can tell when she's comfortable. Her ears are up, her tail's wagging. And then I'd be in the ring and I would go leave her on signals. I'd go all the way down. I turn around and she looks entirely different. No ears. Like, she's got no ears. They're so far back on her head. She looks like she wants to die. She's looking at me like, please help me. Please rescue me. And right there, I'm recognizing that look. It's definitely pressure. You know, she's feeling pressure. So then I say to myself, I got to help this dog through that feeling of pressure in that situation. And how do I recreate that in training? So in training, you know, I can set her up with somebody and we do signals and I'm like, touch her, pet her, and she's fine. You know, she's tail, she know, like, she's like, oh, we're doing the thing where you're testing, you know, we're doing the whole thing. And she gets, she like rises to the occasion because she knows it's, I think she knows it's a training op.
Yeah.
I can't get it. I can't recreate it. I'm like, and I can tell because when I turn around, she looks like she's like, game on, bitch, like, tails up, ears are up. And I'm like, well, this isn't working. How am I going to help her through pressure if I can't get it here in training? So then I had to get creative because I'm like, I have to come up with something so that when I get that same look I'm seeing in the ring. Because that's what I have. That's the reading. You know, I'm reading my dog because I can see it. her body language. So I actually had to take food and I put like a plate of food next to her and I turn around and that dog looks exactly how she does in the ring. That recreated that for me, like so I can help her. But that's if I wasn't able to recognize the body language, I wouldn't have been able to come up with a way so that I could recreate it in training. That's what I'm trying to talk about.
Right.
It's so important to be able to read that.
You have to read it first. So I think that, you know, watch your dog's behavior in life. Watch your dog's expression. Pressure is uncomfortable. They're not going to like it. Videotape what happens immediately before and during, right? And you're going to see like, oh, this happened and that's what makes my dog uncomfortable. It's usually it's barriers. It's people. You know, it doesn't always have to be it like the person converging on. It could just be you left your dog and the dog's uncomfortable being left there because, you know, there's barriers around it. There's a judge or a person or people nearby or behind the dog, whatever. So you have to kind of like look on video. So I am going to talk about like how to handle pressure, because I think that if it's done correctly, I found this really fascinating. So dogs have a negative association to pressure. So then I was like, okay, well, how can I create the opposite, a positive association with pressure, right?
Right, right.
But before I get into that, because that's like probably a whole episode, is we should talk about handlers putting pressure on dogs, inadvertent pressure, first and foremost, because what I've seen happen, and this was one of the most fascinating things I've ever seen. I should email her and see if she still has those videos. It was a while ago. So I had a student and her dog was a worrier, right? So I'm like, oh yeah, I know those dogs. And so what she would try to do is she would try to compensate. So the dog would be like struggling a little bit and then she'd go like, so hold your ears. Yes! What a good job! Good job! And the dog was like, right? And I'm like, okay, how do I put this without hurting anybody's feelings? And then I had an idea. And I said, I want you to praise your dog completely without words. Say what? No words. So this is hilarious because when I tell people you're not allowed to talk and they go to praise your dogs, they feel like they need to make up for the lack of talking. So they feel like they need to like jump up and down
cheerlead
the dog. Yes. And I'm like looking at the video like, what are they doing?
First thing I thought of, I'm like jumping. They start jumping. Yes.
And then the dog's looking at them like, what are you doing?
Dude, you are a weirdo.
And I'm like, no. That is not what I meant. I'm like, okay, let me rephrase. I want you to say act exactly like you normally do when you verbally praise your dog. Exactly the same. Just say the words in your head. Don't do anything different. Don't act like a crazy person. Don't feel like you need to overcompensate. Act exactly the same. Say the words in your head. Unbelievable. Completely different dog. Night and day. Different. Completely fascinating, right? Because the dog was reading that as pressure. And she hated it. Owner acted that way. Took all pressure off the dog. Dog responded beautiful. And the dog absolutely read that she was being praised.
Yeah.
Absolutely read that without a problem, because what we forget is dogs are not verbal.
Right.
And unlike humans, dogs are highly observant.
Yeah.
They notice the time. My dogs notice when I get my hair cut because they all go up and they start sniffing my hair and sniffing my face like, oh, it's still you. Okay. Like, they're very observant.
They are. They are. You know, a good example of that on the human end of it, so you can relate. It's like, imagine yourself at the airport with somebody and something happens and you're going to be late to get on your flight. And so you start feeling pressure, right? I got to get there. I got to get there. I got there. And your friend starts going like, oh my God. Oh my God. We're going to be late. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. We got like that oh is God. Like, a, yes. right? So then you're like, oh my God, the pressure just like tripled in like a heartbeat. Instead, if your friend was like, it's fine. We're good. You're all set. We're going to make it. Then you're going to be like, okay. All right. We got this.
Right.
So that's the big difference on how we inadvertently can cause way too much pressure.
Yeah, like don't get frenetic. Cool, calm, and collected. Like you're the leader. Like this is easy for me because I've always, ever since I was very young, like I was always the one in charge. Like I was always the one that everybody came to. I was always the one that like when... You know, things
when the shitstorm went down.
Everything's going, everyone runs to me.
You are the rock.
And then I'm the one that's like, okay, everybody calm down.
Yeah.
Let's solve the problem. Right.
Right.
So it's very natural for me, like, to just be like, you're fine.
That moment. Like, see, that's real. Like, again, that's a skill. Like, you got to really learn how to do that. Right.
Yeah. You have to be the anchor. Right. Like if you're like if it's like you said, right, if you're panicking and everybody around you is panicking, you're only going to panic more. Right. So if
exactly.
my dog's like, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God. And I'm like, it's OK. You'll be fine. Don't worry about it. My dog's going to go, oh, my God, I knew it. See, she just confirmed it. This is bad.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
I'm the opposite. I instantly flip into super calm mode, right? And I stand up tall and I am in control. And I look at my dog and I'm just like,
everything's
fine.
Yep.
You're fine.
It is super hard. Like, I'm going to go back to the NOC this year in my second ring with my poor husband because that's exactly what freaking happened to me.
I saw it.
Yeah. Because he didn't understand how to really gauge dogs ahead of me.
Which
you know,
isn't
was,
what you said at the moment. But
I know. I know. We'll let that slide. Yeah. I'll be listening. I hear about that. Yeah. So I wasn't prepared because I thought I had a couple dogs ahead of me and now they're calling my number. And what did I do? I panicked. And instead of going, everything's fine, I started getting frenetic. I banged into Ever, who is fucking the most sensitive dog on the planet, which was like a train wreck. And we barely survived that ring. It was not pretty, but it was all a bleed out from my response to pressure.
It was totally. And then you were so nervous that it made her so nervous and she's in the ring and she's like, she is expecting like danger.
Yeah.
Like you could see it. Like she's looking left. She's looking right. She's looking left. Like she wasn't looking like at anything. She was like, oh God, something's coming. Cause mom's in a panic and this is not good. Something's going to get me like any minute. Right.
It's like perfect example of like how that just turned into a shit storm because of my reaction to it.
And then I told you, and then I'm like, this is hilarious. So like, I go up to your husband, right? And I'm like, look, she can't act like that. Tell her I said blah, 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 blah. And I walked away. And as I walked away, I'm like, he has no idea what I just said. Like, I have to go tell her myself. Like, he had this look in his face, like probably because you freaked out. And he's like, oh my God, what just happened? And I'm like, she totally didn't, you know, she needs to hold it together, blah, blah. And he's probably like, huh?
Like, he was like, I just want to go home. You guys are fucking nuts.
Oh my gosh. So then I was like, all right, I have to find time to go tell her myself because I don't think he's going to like
be able to
convey that message. Cause
right.
But again, read the dog in front of you.
Right, exactly.
Right. I'm like, I looked at him. I'm like, he didn't even get that. Right.
Right.
So like,
right.
You have to read the person. You have to read the dog. You have to see what's going on. But yeah, so yeah. It's being, getting nervous, getting frenetic, thinking you're helping the dog by acting like overly enthusiastic or overly energetic. Yeah. And it's, leaning, bending over the dog, petting the dog, right? They hate it. They don't like it. They're going to be very clear about it. They lean away. They move away. They jump away. Like, I remember was it Zeal? Yeah, it was Zeal. Zeal is a very affectionate dog. Very affectionate. Probably one of my most affectionate dogs. And I remember it was, it was in a class. He was still very young and green. And I was so happy with his class, right? And it was the last thing he did. And the judge goes, exercise finished. And I was overjoyed and I bent down to hug him and he leaped away from me, stood there a good distance away and looked at me and was like, I'm very glad that you're happy with me, but calm down. And I'm like, sorry, buddy, you know, because again, like if someone looms over you and like, you know, in that moment, like there's a time and a place that was clearly not the time and the place in his mind. Right. Someone to act like that.
Right.
But in general, people like sometimes they're excited and they praise the dog or they think they're helping the dog and they bend down, like, look, or like, just like that thing where they're trying to get the dog in the weave or over, and they're bending down and they're like, weave, and the dog's like,
get me,
holy Hannah, get me out of here, right? Or whatever the scenario, you know, or like in nose work, you have to be so careful and how you're using your body, because you're going to either push the dog away or push the dog towards a false alert, because your body, your motion, and the most subtle motion, again, go look at your dogs in the yard.
Yep.
Subtle motion, big reaction sometimes from one dog to the other. They really read pressure. You have a herding breed, forget it.
Yeah.
You better learn about pressure, because they have zero tolerance for our human shenanigans and our complete, like, you know, lack of awareness, lack of spatial awareness.
Yeah, but it's true. And they're all different, you know? I mean, I'll say this about me, like understanding pressure. Like when I am under pressure, like my I'm not really a hugger. Like, let's just get that out there. I'm not a hugger. I'm not. Well, it's because of how I grew up. Like, nobody hugged in my family. But Tom, he's a fucking hugger. Like, hug, touch, which is fine. But when I'm under pressure and he wants to hug it out, I can't do it. Like, I can't do it. I can't handle that when I'm feeling.
Because it's more pressure.
It's more
perceived as pressure
for me. So it's the same for your dog, or could be the same for your dog. So just be careful where you think that it might be a helpful tactic. Your dog's totally perceiving that as more pressure.
And it's this weird human thing, right? So for example, with healing, I feel it, and everybody does this, right? So you're healing and all of a sudden your dog gets maybe a little distracted, maybe a little worried, whatever, right? A little flat. And what do people do?
Lean and bend.
And what does that do? The complete opposite. And it's fascinating, because to this day, I will feel that urge, right? Like my dog dips their head a little bit in the ring. I feel the urge to bend, but I do the opposite.
Yeah.
And it works like a charm. I stand up super, super tall. Like I tell people, pretend there's a rope tied to your head and it's pulling you up.
Yeah. Right?
Stand up super, super tall and boop, the dog's head comes up
because
you took pressure off.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, it's that subtle. And I heal pretty darn tall to begin with. Right. So it's not like I'm bending at the waist and then I stand up. It's a very subtle
stretch up. Yeah.
Stretch. Right. It's a very subtle motion. It's like I'm already tall. I just stand up even taller.
Yep.
And my dogs always respond to that. Like, people set their dogs up in heel position. The dog's like, you know, nervous, not whatever the case. They bend down. They lean down. Over here, look at me. Stop. No, do the opposite. Stand up super, super tall. Get out of their space. Take the pressure off.
Yep. I have a little thing that I always remember in my head. I always try to remember like a pot boiling, about to boil over with the lid on. And when I start feeling that pressure of that, I'm always like, when I feel that with my dog a little bit, I'm like, stand tall, take the lid off. Like, just like, come up with something, because you do, like, you for some reason we're like biologically want to like
bend down. It's weird. Close.
Yeah.
And I mean, if someone did that to me, I'd be like, could you just back away? Like, back off. Get like off. Weird. If you think about how into their space we get, if your friend did that to you, you would be uncomfortable.
Yes.
Like, if you literally mimic, right, exactly something you do with your dog, and you did that with another human being, try your kids, they'd be like, what? It would be hilarious. They would be like, what? A teenager would be perfect. Grab your local teenager.
Yeah.
And be like,
and get in their
here
space
for a minute. Sit here and like bend all over them. They'd be like, ew.
Get off me. Get off me.
Get off me. Get off me. Get away. Right. But yet we do it to dogs and we don't even notice. We just like, oh, yeah. Like, this is just how we roll. Like,
yeah.
What are you doing? You know, get out of there. Stop that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter. Like, you know, Zesty is very unique. He's like the only dog I've ever had. He loves hugs, like for real hugs. It is the craziest thing. He comes up to me, puts his paws on my shoulder and pushes into me, and I will squeeze him like a real hug. And then I let go. And he pulls me in for more. That is highly unusual.
Very unusual. Yes.
Very unusual. Right. Very unusual. However, when we're working, or if he's, you know, if we're training or working and he's under pressure, he does not want me to do that.
Yeah.
In that moment in time.
Right.
You know, right. No, that is not the time or the place for that.
Exactly.
So you have to really think about, and again, watch video. Like, the beautiful thing about video is I don't have to say, you know, I just point it out. See how when you bent over like that, how your dog turned its head all the way around, like its head is not connected? Or do you see how your dog moved away, or how you lean and your dog leans? Like, you can see it. And you just have to be objective and unemotional about it, right? Because there's that emotional component. Oh, there are giant teddy bears. There are giant stuffed animals. There are living, breathing, babies. We love them. Kiss, 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 kiss. Oh, God. Try doing that with Zaina. Good luck.
Oh, my God. I don't think
hope you have a plastic surgeon nearby. She'd be like, get out of here. But they don't like it.
They don't like it. They don't like
it. So, yeah. So you really need to pay attention to that. So your body is going to have a huge impact on your dog. Stepping into the dog, leaning, bending, twisting. You know, sometimes it's staring too hard.
Yeah.
Like, all those things a dog will perceive as pressure. How do you know? Look at it. Look at video. See how your dog reacts. They're telling you. They're screaming it at you. We're just not listening.
Test it out. It's easy just to test it out. Like, goof around with it. Like, you know, if your dog's in front, sitting in a front, and you lean forward, I bet your dog's going to move back.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. You know, so it's really a good way to just kind of see how your body's affecting them.
Pay attention to that.
Pay
attention to your voice and your praise. Like, maybe you can praise like, wow, that was good, buddy. And your dog likes that. But maybe another dog doesn't. You know, like, I'm a lot like, I have done live seminars and took and I'll be like, here, let me work your dog. I'm just very animated. Like, I get very excited when I train dogs. And so the dog does something and I'm like, yes, that was really good. And the dog's like, oh, whoa. My God, lady, get I'm like, oh.
Sorry, buddy.
Sorry, buddy. I got to tone it down a little bit. That's a little too much. Right. Yeah. But you have to read that in the moment. You don't want to be kind of oblivious. Right? I don't, because that's not fair. That would be mean. Like if I kept, well, this is how I praise. So just deal with it, dude. Like, no. Right. That's just not right. Silence is amazing. Praising dogs in silence is super powerful. I've done it with quite a number of students when I felt like that was a good option. And it is like, I mean, I never use the word miraculous. It's miraculous sometimes.
It is.
Like,
it is.
It's stunning. Like,
yeah. And then they're like, wow. I'm like, see?
Mm-hmm.
Just go quiet.
It's just amazing. And so that's super powerful. Same with like if you're trying to get the dog to do something, sometimes just be quiet. Stand up tall, right? Like for the weave pull, sometimes when I see people post video, I'm like, oh gosh, you know, be quiet, point it out, get out of the way.
Yeah.
Give your dog a chance to do it. You know, like give him a chance. Like, don't overmanage your dog, you know, we do that a lot. We tend to try to overmanage them, especially when we see things not going well. The dog doesn't look comfortable. Then we like kind of lose our minds. Right.
Right. Right. Well, we try to try to take control of the situation and fix it in the half second that we have. And usually it's just too much pressure.
Too much for the dog.
Yeah.
And then we have to, I guess we'll have to talk about that too. Like, you know, when you feel pressure in certain situations, like you need to practice yourself being under pressure. Because the other thing that happens is, so people go in the ring, they're under pressure, right? Because they're nervous. They put all these expectations on themselves, on the dog, and then they're inadvertently putting pressure on the dog without even realizing it, right?
Right.
Because they're not aware and they're not managing themselves, which is why, like, I love when I insist that my students go train in different locations, because a lot of times they're very reluctant because they're uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, that's perfect. That's exactly why you should go, because you're going to practice how you're going to feel at a competition.
Right.
And then you need to learn how to handle yourself in that situation.
Yep. That's a big one. That is a big one. Everybody needs to do that. It's because you are not going to be not nervous at a trial. You are not. You are going to have some sense of being uncomfortable for sure. And stuff is going to happen to you at a trial. Take it from me, because it happens. You need to know how to handle it for sure.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm not going to go down the mental management rabbit hole, but you have to be aware of the fact that if you feel pressure and you don't know how to manage that, that you are going to put that on your dog.
Right.
And that's not going to go well.
Not at all.
It's not going to go well for your dog. And then it's not going to go well for you, because you're not going to be happy with the outcome.
Right.
So that is a factor, and that is something that is controllable, right? You need to just acknowledge, yes, that's part of competing, and therefore I need to take actionable steps to learn how to manage that, so that when the situation arises, I don't take that pressure and put it on my dog.
Yeah. Because that's easy to do.
Very easy to do.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably a good place to stop. And then in the next episode, we can really get into the weeds about
how to
handle it. Because I'm a really huge believer and convert ever since, you know, all the trial and error and figuring it out with Zeal, and realizing that, like, I completely was able to change how he felt about pressure.
Right.
And that was absolutely fascinating to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And a game changer.
But like, yeah, so interesting that you can actually change how they feel about pressure, but it has to be handled in a very specific way. And it works across really all sports. Like, I've had students in just a wide variety of sports, even in life. Like, I had somebody who's like, I don't even know if I'm going to compete. I just want my dog to be more comfortable in these situations.
Right.
And like, yeah, so how we do that.
Yeah, we'll get into
all the different ways we do that.
Yeah.
And then you guys can change your dog's relationship with pressure, where pressure cues something positive instead of pressure cueing
a negative
feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, perfect. Yeah. Awesome.
Awesome. All right.
All right. Great. Thanks, everybody.
Bye. See you next time. Bye.